Thanks to everybody who's given so far in this second day of our spring pledge drive. I appreciate it. Appreciate your joining us today for Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our show, it's the Midday News Wrap. We'll look behind the headlines of the week with Luke Broadwater of the New York Times and two of my colleagues here at WIPR, Scott Mausioni and Emily Hofstetter. And if you've just joined us today, it's Midday on the Arts. My next guest is James O'Donnell, the organist emeritus of Westminster Abbey in London. Since leaving his prestigious position at Westminster in 2022, he has moved across the pond to New Haven, Connecticut, to teach at Yale University. He'll be in Baltimore playing a recital and leading the music in an evensong service at Emmanuel Episcopal Church on Sunday, and he joins us now on Zoom from New Haven. James, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you very much. Nice to be on your show. Thank you for asking me.
Well, we're delighted to have you. So you have played some historic, played and led the music for some very historic events at Westminster Abbey, including, for example, the wedding of the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge or the Prince and Princess of Wales. What am I supposed to call Kate and William? What's their official title? Do you know?
Well, their official title is now the Prince and Princess of Wales. But when they were married, they only just became the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge on the day of their wedding, I think. So it's a kind of moving feast.
It's a moving target, isn't it?
Yeah.
And of course, you know, Kate's cancer diagnosis, which was made public just a while ago, a few weeks ago. We keep her in our thoughts and best wishes. You played Queen Elizabeth II's funeral for an event like that, a huge international event. Walk us through the planning for that particular event. I mean, I understand that Queen Elizabeth had some significant involvement in deciding what would take place at her funeral. Is that correct?
I don't know if that's correct, because that wouldn't have been something that I was privy to. So one of the funny things about being an organist of an English cathedral or collegiate church like Westminster Abbey, with a capital O, is that your role as an organist with a small O diminishes. And I was basically the director of music there. So in fact, I was the director of music for that occasion, and indeed for all the occasions in the Abbey during my time musically. And you can imagine that the planning process for a big event like that, which is not just of national significance, but has an international significance as well, and a resonance all over the world, is a very complicated and sort of multi-layered thing, and took place over a number of years. So there was some long-range planning, because, you know, although it's not nice to have to think of a funeral, and particularly when the person is still very much alive and in good form, as the late Queen was for many years, it's inevitable that at some point the funeral will have to take place. And when it does, there won't be much time to plan. So the planning does have to take place in a number of different layers. Some is quite long range, and it's all done very discreetly and very sensitively, and very professionally. And so my personal involvement as director of music, I was brought in to be involved in the content of the funeral service itself in Westminster Abbey. But as you may remember, your listeners will surely remember, the funeral event as such was enormous, and involved a lot of other organizations, a lot of other places, and a lot of the armed forces, and the whole kind of British establishment was part of the marking of the death of our monarch. So my role in a sense then comes into a different perspective. But actually, during the service in Westminster Abbey, the music was under my direction, and I think the planning of it was a fascinating and was a wonderful responsibility to have, a great responsibility, and I hope that it did justice to the late Queen and to the momentousness of an occasion marking an end of a big era and the beginning of a new one in many ways.
Well, I definitely think it did great justice to Queen Elizabeth II. Let's listen to a little bit of your conducting the choir at Westminster Abbey. This is a beautiful anthem by Ray Vaughan Williams called O Taste and See.
O taste and see, O taste and see, O taste and see.
how much time did you have to work with the choir once the music was chosen? I understand O Taste and See was actually a favorite anthem of Queen Elizabeth II. In terms of how much time you got to work with the choir on all of the music for that event, which was watched by millions, perhaps even a billion people on the day that you performed it.
Well, of course, some of the music was in our repertoire anyway. So there was that Vaughan Williams piece, which was composed for the coronation of Queen Elizabeth. So it was a very strong connection with her, which was why we wanted to do it in the funeral, why we included it. And the Parry, My Soul There Is a Country, which is also, you know, part of our repertory. But there were two brand new pieces which we had commissioned, obviously very discreetly, for use at the occasion, should that be approved, which it was in the end, one by James Macmillan, one by the master of the Queen's music then, Judith Weir. And these two pieces we couldn't work on until we needed to. So in fact, the musical preparations for the funeral and for the lying in state, which was an event a few days beforehand, only began a few days after the death of the Queen. And this may sound rather odd to people unfamiliar with the workings of a choir like this, but you have to remember that a choir like Westminster Abbey Choir or many cathedral and other collegiate choirs sings every day. So our normal schedule in the week was to have 8 choral services per week with different music at each one, in addition to all the other events, you know, special services such as memorial services or royal weddings and huge occasions, and occasionally making recordings or going on tour, giving concerts and so forth. All of that was done, you know, in addition to a continuum of daily services. So it's actually a mechanism that is geared to working quickly and well and is fluent. It's like a well-oiled machine. So it was a kind of, again, in a layer, some of the unfamiliar music had to be learned very carefully, but very quickly. And the other music was more familiar and had to be, you know, re-prepared and revised. And then everything comes together and you want everything to come together to its peak at exactly the right moment. And I hope that's what happened. It certainly felt like that.
Yeah, well, it certainly sounded like that to my ears. James O'Donnell is the organist emeritus of the famed Westminster Abbey in London. We're talking about some of the historic occasions in which he has led the music. The little kids that are in your choir, talk about how they join this, you know, esteemed and world-famous choral organization. I mean, here we are talking about performing 8 times a week. You're not talking about just rehearsing every day. You're talking about performing every single day, sometimes twice a day in a normal week, to say nothing of, you know, special occasions like weddings and funerals, etc., of people from the royal family. How does a young child come to be a chorister at Westminster Abbey?
Well, it's quite a complicated process. I mean, not all musical children even are cut out for it. It is a particular kind of life. For the right child with the right abilities, the right kind of personality, the right disposition towards working in a kind of hardworking team, it is a bit like a sports team being in a choir and working at that intensity, and particularly working alongside adult professionals. I mean, the lower voices in Westminster Abbey Choir, as in, you know, some other English cathedral choirs, were provided by experienced professional singers, you know, who all had considerable careers and were, you know, great experts in what they were doing. And so the children in the choir were part of that setting. So it's you can imagine it's a quite a sophisticated thing to require of a young child. So the auditions were competitive and rather searching, and I think we were looking for people. We were looking for the right people. We were also looking to sort of protect people who weren't right for it from that experience, because it can be quite difficult if you're not really cut out for it. So it was a rather imprecise, unscientific thing, but It's like, many things in life, it when you see it. So we came, we would find a child who was an appropriate chorister, and the picture added up, and everything seemed to be absolutely right. And that they were the people we were looking for.
And they go to school there, they rehearse there, they, you know, they live there
Exactly.
from a young age. How old or how young is the youngest member of the choir?
So they'd come at the age of 8, having been auditioned at the age of 7, and they would be there for 5 years, so they'd leave at 13. And that's a fixed period. The choir, the school had its curriculum, a 5-year curriculum from 8 to 13, after which they had to leave and go to another school. And some of these children's voices had changed by the time they left, and they'd kind of gently stopped singing. Some of them were kept singing until they left, and some of them were singing some years beyond their leaving, which is slightly frustrating because they might still have been very valuable choristers. But it's an educational pattern that exists in the UK, where the preparatory school age is 8 to 13, and then the senior school takes over at 13. So that's the age range that we worked within.
Well, it's just the results are just remarkable, and they've been remarkable year after year, and literally day after day. James O'Donnell is the organist emeritus of the famed Westminster Abbey in London. He'll perform a recital and lead the music for an evensong service Sunday afternoon and evening at Emmanuel Episcopal Church here in Baltimore. That recital begins at 3 o'clock. Thanks so much, James. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you so much.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.